It's hour two of the Dr. Future Show.
And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Hey, folks. Welcome back to the show. To give you a little different perspective, perhaps even a little distance from the typical American understanding of our elections, we're going to take you to a Canadian friend of ours, originally Canadian, now American, hybrid, I guess you might say, today, Dr. Bruce Damer, who was born in British Columbia. He's a multidisciplinary scientist, designer, speaker, all-around Renaissance man, I would say, in this day and age. And he lives in our own backyard here in Boulder Creek. He's been on KSCO a number of times with us and with MZ on the Saturday Morning Special, talking about a topic that just may be having some more relevance to us as we approach the post-election period of our time. And that's called the Constitutional Convention, the idea of a Constitutional Convention, again, 250 years after the first ones. So welcome, Bruce Damer, Dr. Bruce, to the show. Appreciate your presence.
Hi. Hello, Dr. Future. Can you hear me?
We can hear you, yeah. Welcome from Boulder Creek. How is the election going on in Boulder Creek?
I'm sitting right here next to Galen, and we had a wonderful, sweet time as little old ladies at our polling station at the firehouse. It was very nice.
Oh, good. Yes, they gave me I voted sticker there, too, even though I was just mailing my mail in. It was great. As a matter of fact, they gave me two of them. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Yeah. Now, you were on with MZ, I think back in 2014, talking about the Constitutional Convention. Could you refresh our minds about how that would be useful to improving our situation here?
Yeah, it was called the Radical Remake Project, and it was in 2011, right at the time of Occupy.
Oh, 2011. Okay, it's older than I thought.
It's a long time ago, yeah. And we were on this show, and then we were on the Saturday Special show with MZ. It was kind of a beautiful conversation. This is derived from Lawrence Lessig's book called Republic Lost. And he's one of the leading constitutional scholars in the nation. He's a lawyer at Harvard. And this book is really literally about how the republic over the period of time has become lost. It's become gamed by money and powerful interests. And it lays out four or five techniques to get it back. And a couple of those lead to a constitutional convention, which Thomas Jefferson was a big promoter of, one of the signers of drafters of the Declaration of Independence. He wanted a constitutional convention to happen every couple of two, three generations.
Well, how did it get to become such a sacred thing where you don't touch it, like the Bible almost?
Well, it's one of the regrets of Jefferson, who was one of the primary drafters. So the Constitution is only changed by amendments, the addition of amendments. And that was the compromise position. But I think it's clear from how our electoral process has devolved that we need to remake it. And that can be done in the context of a full constitutional convention, which is spelled out in the Constitution, how to hold one and what it does.
Really? So the seeds of its own change are in the Constitution itself?
Yeah, and in fact, I think the rule is there's a certain percentage of state legislatures have to vote for a convention, and then one is held. So there's various pathways to holding that. And perhaps America, maybe not today, but is moving toward a point where we need to reboot the entire electoral process, maybe into a multi-party, much more representative democracy.
Well, for instance, we're looking at Prop 59 today, which is to have an advisory vote about
Citizens United.
Yeah. Yes, reversing Citizens United, or at least the political campaign contribution aspect of that. I've often heard that if we open it up to a constitutional convention for anything, it's just going to be a free-for-all. You know, there's going to be a lot of our sacred cows will be examined.
Well, you know, it's the one way to do it all in one shot. I lived in Eastern Europe after the fall of communism, and I visited South Africa when they were building their new convention. And probably 40 or 50 countries in the last 20 years have remade their constitutions and are beneficiaries of this, because it really helped them either in rebooting their democracies or their electoral processes or just cleaning up old stuff. And there's no reason why America can't do the same thing. Other countries do it.
Well, I'm curious, why do we need to now? What are the thorns in the side of American constitutional?
You mean why we should update our source code?
Well, I think everybody's agreed. Just going back to Larry Lessig, he held a conference on this back in 2011, and he invited everybody. Green Party, Libertarians, Tea Party, retired military, you name it. They all came, and the minutes of this meeting are online, and they pretty much all agreed that we could really use a rewriting of this code, and it came from all sides. So occasionally you do have to defrag your hard drive.
But it seems to me that in the media now, people feel that our government has departed from the Constitution and they're not even using it, and that is the big problem. Not that we need to rewrite it, it's that we just need to use it in a way that we haven't been for quite some time.
Probably because it's pragmatically not been as useful as it could be. So people do other things.
For example, the Constitution doesn't have anything about money influencing politics. It really doesn't.
Really? Wow.
Although the framers and the founders realized, and there's many writings from that time, that they were worried that what are called men of interest, men of powerful interest, will eventually push the whole system away from representing the people. They were concerned about that, and of course that's what's happened. So that's why Jefferson had written in this letter that he regretted that they didn't mandatorily call for a convention to reset the influence of powerful individuals. So we can go back to their intent and we can just sort of pick it up from there and say, hey, there's a lot of things that have happened in 250 years that they couldn't have predicted.
And
this technology, and do we need the Electoral College anymore? The Electoral College was established so that men on horseback had the time to
Bruce, can we talk about the Electoral College after the break? We got to go to a break for a second, then we'll continue with the Electoral College and how its origin and maybe where we can actually take it. That might be interesting, huh?
Sure. Okay, folks, Dr. Future Show, and we'll be right back with our guest, Bruce Damer, talking about Constitutional Convention and making it all better.
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. Yes, we're talking to Dr. Bruce Jamer about the Electoral College currently, sort of the history of how we might be able to create a constitutional convention in this day and age so that we can update our society a little bit more efficiently than we've had to be subjected to over the last couple of years. So, Bruce, welcome back to the show, and you're about to tell us about the Electoral College.
Well, it's another example of why we have this super awkward system to elect a president, where these weird shaped states have certain votes that accumulate. And that's because it could take weeks for couriers on horseback to bring the news from a territory. And so a lot of these were territories.
Before the telegraph, even.
Even before the telegraph. So it's an antiquated thing that focuses us on this weird electoral map of red and blue, and just bizarre when it should really just be direct votes.
Does any other country do this, or?
I don't think so. I think it's just they count up the votes and they elect a leader based on a popular majority. It makes no sense. So we can get rid of that one pretty
well. I guess the idea was to have more rural votes count more than simply city votes, because the mass population mostly lives in the city, so the city would make all the rules. They'd be less inclined to support agriculture, for example, in their voting structure.
There was this whole idea back then that men who were learned or landowners would have the vote, and other landowners, people who were not property owners, would not. That, of course, evolved over time. But today, money disenfranchises everybody. Money speaks and makes the legislation and elects the candidates. So we're all disenfranchised.
Now, do you think that the founding fathers did not anticipate the rise of big corporations?
No, not at all. I mean, corporations didn't really exist at all in the 18th century.
Mm-hmm. We've been listening to some interesting TED Talks lately, and one of my favorites that addresses this is by Yanos Varoufakis, who was the Greek finance minister for about 6 months during the big crisis in the Eurozone, which probably the failure to resolve the Greek monetary crisis is what led to the impetus for Brexit and the sense that people had that the little guys were not being taken care of by large centralized monopolistic governments. You know, Yanos Varoufakis is a brilliant intellectual economist. He just recently published a TED Talk about how that the economic sphere is a democracy-free zone. And so we have a real problem in that the political sphere is still trying to honor democratic principles, but that is not driving the equation because the power exists in financial structures that are not accountable to democracies. They're only accountable to financial circles, and it's not democratic at all. So This is our problem.
Yeah, other countries have voting via the internet, very secure because we shop by the internet, and it's much more hackable to hack a physical ballot box or a telephone system than it is to hack encrypted internet traffic. You know, it's very much more easy. You know, India, which is the world's largest democracy, has online voting on people's phones, I think, at this point.
Mm-hmm. A couple of the other articles that we had today to address somewhat related issues, one of them is that in Iceland, where the only country in the world that actually went after their bankers for criminal negligence and put a bunch of people in jail for many years, and their banking institutions went through bankruptcy, and now every Icelandic citizen is being given a cash settlement from the bankruptcy of their banks. That's one thing that happened when the political system was accountable to the public.
Yeah, transparent. And of course, Iceland is a lot more rational and common sense country than we are. The second problem America has to deal with is the incredible storm of bogus reporting in media and manipulation. It's propaganda from within. Icelandic people and perhaps Canadians are a little bit more skeptical of anything told to them. Americans tend to be very gullible and go with anything. And I'm talking about the ones on the right, the left, the center. They're not born or raised to be skeptics. And so the problem is that you can swing Americans every which way. And you can't do that to the average Dane.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. And I was going to say, if you even look at the map, you know, the red-blue map of the political spectrum in the United States, it really seems that it's the gullibility factor in terms of people who just embrace beliefs without any adherence to fact or hypothesis or any kind of scientific community, but just really spout belief as belief, is through the center of the country, and I don't really know why that is.
Hey, but we do have George Carlin. We did have George Carlin.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Dogma, the comedian who taught us about dogma.
He pointed out that government and business, they've had a revolving door for a long time. This is nothing new. This is going on, and that the show that we're given is just for us, just to keep us entertained, while the real business goes on behind the scenes. And we have almost nothing to do with it.
Yeah, maybe what it is that we just don't have trust. We don't have a system for curating the truth anymore. I mean, we kind of used to leave that to the news media, and we used to have trust that was inculcated by religion, that was creating a common moral fabric for the average person. We had a belief in our institutions of power, like government, until what I considered probably everything from Kennedy to Nixon and the impeachment of Nixon and Watergate to every scandal since then. It's like people just don't trust government anymore. We see them all as crooks who take advantage of the system and who lie to and cheat to win and don't tell you the full story. And we don't know how to see them as honorable human beings.
Remember what George said about that, too. He said that the politicians come from the American people.
Right.
No, I mean,
it's
us. You can't blame anybody but us. You know, they came from us. Yeah. Right? They're reflective of our own awareness.
That's true. I mean, we must have a lot of contempt for ourselves to have that much contempt for our leaders.
Yeah, and of course, the big issue is that we get the leaders we deserve. Most Americans have never been through duress. They've never been through really bad political duress or oppression, right?
Like you're having your homeland invaded.
Yeah. When I lived in Czechoslovakia, what I experienced was a nation that had been traumatized, murders, disappearances, military occupation from World War II up. And you could tell in the population that they had been through that. And Americans have not. And so,
no, just a different mentality. I would agree with you. Like our friend Yakshi Man from Romania definitely has that sense of fearfulness of government almost.
Yeah, so we don't know. I mean, most people alive here, unless they're immigrants, don't have a sense of what, say, fascism or extremism of any kind is really about. So,
and yet, there are a lot of people here who are immigrants. You know?
Yeah, and they know. And so our friends from El Salvador, et cetera, et cetera. So it would be not a good thing for Americans to have to learn the lesson of extremism here, because it could destroy our institutions and be a long time in recovery. Maybe we can rely on our immigrants who don't see the danger signs of where we're shifting to help us pull us back.
So do you think that this constitutional convention can actually happen, Bruce?
One could argue the following, that, people are too radicalized. People are too controlled by media or by gullibility or various beliefs. But to tell you the truth, when I go to Oklahoma and I go to see my red state friends, when average Americans get together, they're decent to each other. They're kind to each other. So if the convention did not have the same media elements, so of course certainly wouldn't have any sitting politicians involved, they would all be out at that point. So as long as it's regular people, not manipulators, not the sociopathic elements of society that create message that we're subject to, I think that people can get along. You know, it's like if you're on a ship, mm-hmm. and the captain has run you aground. And
can you hold that for a sec? We have to go to CBS News. We'll be right back. We're with Bruce Damer after the break. We're talking about the Constitutional Convention.
And keep that thought, Bruce. Let's come back to the ship, okay? We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
This is Alan Lundell, a.k.a. Dr. Future on KSCO Radio. 10 years ago, we bought a house out in Boulder Creek. It was a gamble because we love to be around bandwidth and power. We found the perfect house with incredible view, but no bandwidth or power. I was very despondent. I was reading Wired, and I ran across this Silicon Valley executive who lived in the Santa Cruz Mountains, and he claimed he had bandwidth. He was getting service from some group called Etheric Networks. So I gave him a call. Etheric put a dish on our roof, and boom, we suddenly had amazing bandwidth. It's been 10 years now. We've been very, very happy with their service.
KSCO Residential Special.
Okay, welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. And no, I did not get paid for that. That's really, I do have a dish on my roof.
It's a genuine testimonial.
We actually pay for it. So welcome back to the show. We're talking with Bruce Damer on a new constitutional convention, and you're about to tell us a story, Bruce.
Yeah, here's a good metaphor for the listeners.
Yeah.
You often see this, ships at sea, and the captain runs the ship aground, and we've seen this in the last couple of years a couple times. The captain actually leaves, right? The responsible party, the captain and crew, they leave, and they leave the poor passengers to fend for themselves.
What are we going
to
do?
And the passengers, in some cases, including a huge liner, are self-organized and save themselves. So in our political system, that may be a good metaphor, that these guys may be running the ship aground, but the innovation and the kindness and the cooperation of ordinary people may be the only way forward. And that can happen in a convention. It can happen in other ways.
So if the leaders jump ship, we might be better off?
Well, you know, if you took the politicians completely out of their jobs for a year and simply ran the government with the civil service that's already there, it'd be fine. It would run smoother because legislation wouldn't get passed, but it's not getting passed now anyway. So, you know, we don't really need them for 6 months to a year. So that's the time where you would just reorient. The
machinery would be just run.
Just fine. Run. Uh-huh. Yeah, less noise.
You know, I've always had the idea that we have way too many laws and we have way too many people getting paid money to make more laws, and that what we should do is redirect government so that people in government only get paid if they remove laws from the books and create more harmonious behavior with fewer laws.
like the law that in some states where you still have to walk down the street with a, carrying a flag in front of an automobile so you don't spook horses.
Yeah, exactly. And how much of our government is based on outdated laws like that? I mean, well, for real, though. I mean, important laws, like especially of those since we've have modern day telecommunications and the ability to vote on the Internet and not using any of these capabilities. You know, how far behind are we?
You know, there's two different ways of laws working for people, and one of them is tyrannical and one of them is ideal. The tyrannical one is where people use laws to force other people to do what they don't want to do. You know, it's like where I'm voting to make you do something that you don't want to do. That's tyrannical laws. But the ideal is where everybody has a voice. And in that equality of a voice, those who participate the most, think it through the most, and build coalitions so that they move the momentum towards an outcome that is beneficial. And that's what we want laws to do. But unfortunately, we have so many people that use laws in a really top-down, controlling way that makes things mandatory instead of optional. And that's why I think government feels so oppressive, because it's not in the spirit of the democracy that we signed up for.
So, Dr. and Mrs. Future, the guest that you had in the first hour was quite interesting. What did you glean from him?
Richard Karst? Well, I thought that he was taking politics very seriously. In a good way.
In a good way.
Yeah.
Hey, we do have a comment in here from Yakshi Man. I think he noticed I might have mentioned him. It's my friend from Romania. He writes, not fearful of government that functions with appropriate checks and balances, as in the leading social democracies that are driven by an informed and active citizenry. Hardly the case in the U.S. What we have here is a very dangerous confluence of the military, police, prison, surveillance state, and corporations that have hijacked our legal and regulatory systems. What could possibly go wrong? I'm good. I'm glad he has a sense of humor on this.
No, I tend to agree with him. When we have government forces that are turning police officers, which are supposed to keep the peace at the civil level, at the local level, they're supposed to know their neighborhood. They're supposed to be the last resort when people can't figure things out for themselves. And instead, we've not only empowered them with being the first resort by removing all kinds of layers of social good, like basically if there's a person with mental illness on the street, who do people call? They call 911 and they send police. Police are not trained to deal with situations that require maybe a compassionate caretaker. They're trained to deal with situations where they have to supply superior force. That is not appropriate in most situations. And then when you try and enhance their superior force by making them a military unit, you really begin to oppress the local population. So that's my two cents. We've got a lot of callers.
Yes, let's go to the callers, shall we? This ties in with Prop 54, I might add. You know, for any of those who want to link it to actually voting, that's where our bills in the legislature can be posted online within 72 hours before being voted on, so we all see them in advance. What a concept, right? That all the public meetings should be videotaped and posted online within 24 hours.
All right. Well,
you know, so that's an interesting idea.
Absolutely. So I see we have a call from Summer Rose, and we have a number of people in line, so let's say hello, huh?
Let's do it.
Ready?
Yep.
Yes. Summer, okay. Hey, welcome to the show.
Hi, Summer Rose. Welcome to the Dr. Future Show.
I'm excited to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
All right. Right. Well, I know you were really active in the Bernie campaign for quite some time. And now that that's shifted, are you supporting Clinton or what? What's happening in your world?
No way. Our revolution is so strong that I really believe this might be the year that we break the duopoly. And, you know, we're a big campaign nationwide to write Bernie in and also to get Jill Stein the 5% for her 2020 FEC funding and being able to be a viable third party. So this is the year I believe our movement is finally maturing and getting organized enough to take some solid long-term action.
Excellent. So any recommendations to our voters today?
Well, for sure, the write-in campaign in California is really important. Vermont is really important. A couple of other states that we're really focusing on is New Hampshire and Washington, mm-hmm. because if our main goal with that is to break up, deny Hillary or Trump from being able to win, because if neither of them received the 270 electoral votes required to become the president-elect today, mm-hmm. then the House of Representatives, the new House of Representatives, actually gets to vote in the next president on January 6th from the top three recipients of electoral votes. So that's why if we get Bernie to be the third person to receive the most, he actually has a chance of becoming our president.
Really? So it still could happen. Bernie still could be president at this late date if Hillary doesn't get the 270.
That's right. So, and then, you know, also, it's crazy this, but nothing's been crazier than this election cycle. But okay. People who get sworn in today, they're still not the president. We have until January 20th for perhaps all the WikiLeaks to come out, or, you know, if the NYPD is going to be throwing the book at the Clinton Foundation, and maybe who knows what, if she winds up winning today, but then she winds up being indicted. Who knows what's going to happen?
That's so. Right. Well, it's good. Well, thank you. We're getting a bunch of calls in. We appreciate your input on this. Thank you.
Sure. And in California, one last thing.
Yes.
I know the marijuana, legalizing marijuana
yes,
is important.
Yes, Prop 64.
But my understanding is that this is going to actually legalize it for, like, the big corporations, like the Monsantos. So it's like I want it legalized myself too, but then I wonder about...
Is this the right time? Yeah. I've heard a lot of controversy about that, a lot of pros and cons. But mostly these days it's leaning more towards pro in the world that I've been tracking. But read it carefully. I think that's the advice there.
All right. Thanks, Summer Love.
Yeah, appreciate your call.
Super delegate for Bernie giving us an insight.
All right. Keep us posted as things evolve.
All right.
Keep the burn on. Bye
all
for
right.
now.
Bye for now.
Bye. Now we're going to Mark in Watsonville, who wants to talk about a constitutional convention. Hi, Mark in Watsonville.
Hey, Mark.
Welcome to the show.
Yeah, there's a couple of things you brought up that were interesting. One was sort of your speaking, how come people don't just get together and vote, and the popular vote carries what laws they want to have created. The thing is, the United States, we're not a democracy. We're a representative republic. We vote for representatives who do that for us, but we're not a direct democracy. That's not how our Constitution works. The other thing is on the Constitutional Convention, mm-hmm. there's no mechanism established on picking who would be a delegate at that convention.
Mm.
So you have no control over who's going to sit at the convention.
Which is absolutely critical for it to turn out, right? Wouldn't you say, Bruce?
I would recommend reading Larry Lessig's book, Republic Lost. There's a lot of discussion of that.
Well, the issue is we have the amendment process, which is pretty well regulated and has worked pretty well. So for an amendment of the Constitution to take place, you need 2/3 of the vote of the House and the Senate. We get to elect those representatives in those two bodies. So we do kind of have a control over how our Constitution is going to be changed. If we call a convention and we have no control on who those delegates are going to be, then we've lost control of what our Constitution will change into. And you mentioned Citizens United. Oh, sure, maybe a bunch of delegates would want to repeal Citizens United, but you could also get a bunch of delegates who want to repeal Roe versus Wade. There would be a very much a public input on that. So I think it would be kind of a dangerous situation to fit this unless we can somehow designate how these delegates are going to be chosen to be in this convention.
Totally agree. Totally. Yeah.
So how do you do this? How do you have a fair process of choosing appropriate delegates for a modern constitutional convention?
Well, there is no mechanism in place. That's the short.
We need one, right? So we need to create one.
Convention.
Yeah, so we need to create one that's equitable then.
Yeah, well, got to be careful not to throw the baby out with the bathwater, right?
Well, you got to.
And that's why we rely on the amendment process. That's worked very well since the creation of our country. And again, we get to vote on who is in the House, who is in the Senate, and we have input on how our Constitution.
Now, of course, there I would disagree in that money and powerful interests are not only creating our laws now, but they're also electing our officials. So I would question whether or not we are controlling who represents us anymore and who writes our laws.
All right, folks, we have to go to another break. So everybody stay tuned, and we'll be back with the final section of the Dr. Future Show. Thanks for all this great comments.
Dr.
Okay, welcome back to our Election Day show. We're talking to Dr. Bruce Damer about a new constitutional convention, and that was a good point about needing the right people at a constitutional convention and being able to choose them wisely. Not been worked out yet. We got a couple more callers. You ready?
Yep.
Okay, bring them on, Mrs. Future.
Hello, Larry. Welcome to the Dr. Future show.
Hello.
Hey, you're there. You're live.
Yeah, first time caller. Thank you.
Hey, welcome.
Thank you. It's probably weeks too late. I tried. But anyway, the Trump thing, all the horrible things he's done. Well, years ago, I was around a lot of celebrities, sports, music, actors, blah, blah, blah. And it's absolutely amazing if you're a celebrity, you got people following you, chasing around after you, and any chance they get to be around you, they'll do almost anything. This is common. So
right,
yes,
right.
It's bad, this and that, but people out there don't know what people do with celebrities, or they've never been around anybody. They completely change when they're close to them, blah, blah, blah. And also his manhood, when that went by, someone else brought that some way before him. And what's any guy usually going to say if he hears something bad or funny about him? He's going to go, ho, 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 right?
Okay.
So, there it is.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Weeks too late. And Hillary, she will do anything to be the first woman president. Probably a deal she made out with Bill anyway.
Yeah, she has high ambitions, that's for sure.
Okay, thanks, Larry.
You know,
we got some other callers.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, gee, I wasn't very good, huh? Okay.
Well, no, we did. We have a couple other calls. Just trying
just
to fix everybody on.
We don't have much time, so.
Right.
But,
okay,
but thanks for your opinion. And yeah, it's an important point about celebrities and how it affects people. Celebrity, it's an interesting thing. I wonder if the Founding Fathers dealt much with that issue back in the day. Probably not as much.
All right, one more. Hello, Art in Prunedale. Do you want to tell us something about the election?
Hey, Mrs. Future. Yes, I really enjoy listening to you and your husband. It's really enjoyable. About 20 minutes ago, you were talking about overregulation.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought you gave me the feeling that you were not in favor of overregulation. Is that correct?
Yes. Well, you know, I'm in favor of the minimum amount necessary, but I really feel like we've got too many people on the payroll to make it more complicated than it needs to be.
I'm calling you because I agree with you on that point 100%. And I think that the best candidate today running for president that would be most in sync with fulfilling that would be Donald J. Trump, not Hillary. What do you think?
Well, that's an interesting way of positioning it because, you know, you can always trust that the outsider is going to do things in a new way. But you can't always trust that the way that he's going to do it is going to be a way that you would endorse with your own vote. I don't know. The way that I look at it is that when a candidate finds out what they need when they get into that hot seat, they're privy to a whole bunch of things that we cannot understand. And whatever they say going into the election, it's going to be a whole new ballgame once they're there. I think that's just the case. And that government is a big snowplow. It's a big machine that's constantly moving forward. And it's got a lot of personalities to it. And one person, Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton, some third party candidate, is influencing but not driving.
Yeah. And Bruce, you mentioned that you used to be on government contracts. You'd go to Washington and deal with the Pentagon and stuff. And I think you described it something like an amoeba, you know, like it was a headless creature in some way. Do you remember that?
Yeah. What I explained to my American friends and my Canadian friends, and I say,
yeah,
the United States is not a country per se. It's not a country that has a plan like Denmark might have a plan, or even Canada.
Yeah.
It's an emergent phenomenon of interests that push and shove. And it gets pushed and shoved, but there's no plan for the place. It just comes out in the wash of when things are swinging one way or the other.
Which is the whole issue of leadership. And in a sense, that's one of the reasons why Trump is so popular, because he gives you a strong alpha male leader, you know, to rally around.
He appeals because, I'll go and I'll push hard against this huge thing and I'll make some progress, but I doubt whether that would be possible. You know, at Trump's first briefing in the White House, he would be loaded with 10,000 things, and I don't think he has the personality to absorb the complexity of what he will be given in that first briefing.
Well,
you know, I just don't sense that he will.
One thing that doesn't come out is that government is a team sport. I mean, we focus so much attention on the presidential elections, but really, all they can do is be advised by thousands and thousands of people who have special interests.
Well, my understanding is that the president is basically spoon-fed cliff notes every morning. His daily briefing is like little one-page briefs on the important things to think about today.
In a way, this was why Obama actually, people criticize him for not being effective, but he was highly effective, and that he was a conciliator who sought to bring consensus. Now, of course, when you had another political party that was acting more like an insurrection and just fighting him at every step, it was hard. But, you know, he brought a lot of people together under consensus and got a lot of stuff done. And that's actually the kind of president you need.
Mm. And that would probably continue with Hillary.
Yeah. You know, who knows? I suppose. I mean, she's from within the system. But I think for someone to come in and want to push the system over, I don't think that's realistic.
Yeah, if anything, you know, Art, back to your original question about who is most likely to have fewer laws, I think Trump and Clinton both are people who very much rely on their network, their team. They both could be the head of the reality TV show like The Apprentice, you know?
So. Well, I think you're entitled to your opinion personally based upon what Hillary has said at her rallies and her track record versus what Donald Trump has said at his rallies, because we've never been in the political system, that your guest and you seem to be critical of the political system, and Hillary's definitely a part of that, and I'm willing to give my vote to Donald J. Trump because I'm going to think that he's more likely to push and maybe get some of those regulations reduced. That's my feeling on it.
All right.
What do you think?
Well, I think everybody's going to vote their opinion. I personally am going to vote for Hillary because I think that she's trustworthy. Trump, yeah, I really liked him when he was doing The Apprentice. I have really been offended by a lot of things he's thrown out during his campaign. And given my, you know, when I compare, you know, boring Hillary to Trump, I just feel more aligned with Hillary. I'd rather somebody who is a little more predictable, personally.
Okay, well, yeah. my final comment would be, we're not electing senior class president of our high school. It's not personality, it's policy that I'm concerned with. And I think Mr. Trump has the best possibility of fulfilling his promises and being a great leader and making America great again like it was when I was a little boy and grew up during JFK and Eisenhower. So I'm going to push for Trump, and I want to thank you for taking my call.
Thanks,
yeah.
Art.
Yeah, nice
appreciate
to check it in, Art.
Good to hear from you. Yeah. Well, I really think we got to remember that we are a civilized country, and I'm counting on us for that.
I got a comment on an earlier statement about the government being like an amoeba. Yakshi Man says, Nixon referred to it as the octopus. Since the September travesty, over 3,000 new agencies have sprung up in the security state alone. They all have to be at the feeding trough, and they all have to get their budgets, and they all have to, you know, have all their politics associated with that going on constantly, right? It's a constant churning.
That's the reality, folks.
Yeah, and so for somebody to come in and think they're going to lead this octopus, you know, it's like most of it is just in place, right? I mean, and our elected leaders are just almost a superficial layer of it, it seems to me.
Well, I had once the opportunity to meet a very, very powerful individual, and I said to him, is there a cabal that is running the world? And he thought for a moment. He said, maybe before World War II, powerful families had influence, but now, not a chance. It's the serpent that throws you off. No one is in control.
Yeah.
Yeah, so coalitions rule.
Hey, say, we do have a song from your wife, Galen, that is about this. Can we let's play a minute of that before we leave here.
I'm ready. Put it on.
Okay, it's on now.
That's a great way to go out. Well, thanks, Bruce Stamer. Thanks, Galen Brandt, for writing this beautiful song.
There it goes. See you later.
Everybody.
All right. Have a happy election day.
Happy election day. Enjoy your vote. Get out there. Put your opinion to work.
And teach our children wrong from right. Teach our children wrong from right. This is my time. Yes, this is it. And I will
They're going
keep
out with it.
My eyes upon the sky. And I will never, never, never quit when they go low. I will go high when they go low. I will go high.
This is the Dr. Future Show signing off on Election Day here at KSEO Santa Cruz.
I'll be showing what I